Oh, the recording.
The minute I say start talking, it'll say your recording is starting. All right, welcome to Thursday, August, and our budget session with Susan Geiger.
Good morning. The commissioners, all three of you, have requested an overview of the ClearGov product that was purchased last May. We've done quite a bit of development in the product. There's still more development to do, but we'd like to walk through the product with you. I have a handout with an agenda. We're going to look at the what products we have, the data flow chart, and then we'll step through personnel budgeting, operational budgeting, capital budgeting, and the digital budget book. Okay. So the second page of your handout is a graphic that ClearGov produces that gives an overview of what their products are. We have subscribed to the capital budgeting product, the personnel budgeting product. Both of these products import into the operational budget. We also have the digital budget book and the transparency module. And if you look on the screen, those are all on this side view right up here. It looks like my mouse is delayed on the screen, but it's over on the left side of the screen. And this is the homepage that you go into when you log into ClearGov initially. Down at the bottom of the screen, it gives support for the users, the ClearGov Academy, constant updates on this product. And I do mean constant updates, like weekly, we get a product update. So during the time that we've been using it, in just 1 year, a little over a year, the product has been upgraded, and many of the requests we have made have been incorporated into those updates. So that's exciting. In addition to what ClearGov provides, in the time that Cher has been here, she's developed user guides specifically for capital budgeting and operational budgeting. When our users are using this product, they're going in once a year. So the understanding of how the product works, how to navigate, gets lost, I think, in between those budget times. They literally spend about a month, month and a half in the product, and then don't necessarily go back to it once it's uploaded into Finance Enterprise. So we have developed those products.
There's a good linkage between Finance Enterprise and this.
There hasn't been, actually. There's no direct interface between this product and Finance Enterprise. It's not integrated. ClearGov has a partnership with Finance Enterprise. Initially, the product didn't allow for an upload that didn't have to be manipulated. So the GL coding had a three-digit code in the middle of it that we had to remove before we could do any upload. So we had to export the data, manipulate it in Excel to get to a good upload. That's been rectified literally just yesterday.
Oh,
yeah. So now we should have a smooth upload, and that will streamline that process probably by 1 or 2 days that it took to export that data and manipulate it.
So this one of the upgrades where you said they listened to your concerns and then incorporated upgrade.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you said that the users only use it once a year, but I think that some of our departments are using it more frequently for their capital projects.
Correct. The capital budgeting product directly links down to transparency. And Cher's going to give a little bit of an overview on that. We have implemented the operational budgeting. We started with that last year, and personnel budgeting last year. Personnel budgeting was quite a bear last year. I have reprogrammed it to be more fluid for us so that the coding flows through, and I'll show you what that looks like when we get there. And we've developed the 2023 budget book to the best of our ability at this point in time. And we'll show you where the gaps in that are to get to where we'd like it to be. And then we developed the capital budgeting this year with each one of the departments. Transparency is still under development. Last year, facilities actually put in a bunch of their projects, but the way this program flows is it's supposed to flow from capital budgeting down to the project transparency model. And there's also a piece in there that can be turned on to our website so people can see what projects we have, what status they're in, and even some financial metrics in there with that. But we'll show you that here in a little while. So this next page of the handout kind of gives, it's a busy flow chart, but it looks at what the different modules are in the program and how the information flows into each one of them. So each one of the modules flows into the digital budget book eventually. The operational budget flows into the digital budget book. Personal management and capital budgeting both import into the operational budget. And I'll show you what that looks like as we look at those parts of the operational budget when it shows up in there. And then transparency comes right down into those areas as well. It's a little busy. I think it's easier for me to understand it because we're in it all the time. But it does provide a little bit of an overview of what that looks like.
I'm curious. So,
So personnel budgeting and capital budgeting, you mentioned at the beginning, they get done and then they flow into the operational budget.
Once they're complete and they're, so this year was the first year of development for capital budgeting. We did have some push points. We had to push some of the capital budgets back to the departments because the information did not flow into operational budget. So they had to fix some places in there, and then we were able to upload it on the second attempt.
And then out of the operational budget, you can pull charts. Eventually, you can get to that transparency module.
Right. Yeah. And we haven't worked on that chart portion is down here on the lower part of the left.
What's the purpose of the transparency module? What does it provide?
We'll show you what it looks like when we get to that point.
And then you said that the operational budget flowed into the digital, or on this chart flowed into the digital budget book, but it also has the capital budgeting, which is where I think Ryan got ahead of
on the transparency.
What appears to be a 1-2-3 process. So all of these are actually accurate, all these arrows. It's just that
it's how it flows together. We didn't have the capacity to implement all of the modules at the same time. Yeah. I mean, we bought it in May and budget started shortly thereafter. Right. Mm-hmm. So we were, you all three of you experienced what that was like last year.
You were a star. You got through it anyway.
I don't think I would necessarily tip
a feel like that. I mean, you were even sick during the time,
but I mean, I was swimming for sure, but whitewater rafting on a class 5. But I guess we got through it, and this year has been a lot better understanding how the information flows together and how you can program it better really has helped. So as I stated, we have implemented operational budgeting the first year and personnel budgeting the first year. This year, the second year, we have a 3-year subscription currently. Capital budgeting was second year, digital budgeting was second year, and we're going to try to get transparency working effectively next year, but we'll have some work to do to either remove the data that's currently in transparency and then load it from Capital, but we'll have to work through those. There's pieces of that that we do not know right now. I wanted to also state that the product support is very responsive. When we call, we get a person right away. When we put in a ticket, we can prioritize it. So if there are some things that take longer to get into the system, like we are not in control of our own general ledger, we can't program that side of it. That's all on the back end. So when we need a new cost center or key, or we need a new object and key in the program in Finance Enterprise, we can program that ourselves. In ClearGov, we can't. It can take as much as a week to get that into the program. So when it's a priority, when we're in crunch time, we don't want to wait that long. We call them and ask them to prioritize it, and we usually can get it done within a day. So they're pretty responsive to us, and they're always pleasant too. It doesn't seem like it's a burden. They're excited about their product. They're very knowledgeable about their product.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, really wish we had that same level of service and knowledge when we call into Central Square for Finance Enterprise, and we just don't.
I'm curious if we've ever discussed moving into ClearPlans, because I don't know what all the capacity of that is, but I mean, we have our transportation improvement plan and our capital improvement plan, and we're about to do this comprehensive plan update. I mean, there's a lot of things that do in some way flow into a budget that we have to go back and pay attention to often.
This is a very new product. Mm-hmm. It has been launched just within this last year. I haven't looked into the program. I did forward a link to a demo to planning and to Michael to take a look at and see if it's something they may be interested in. But I have not reviewed the product at this point.
You might send it to Public Works also, Public Works.
Yep.
Great.
When we finish our budget process, so I'm curious about the permissions and user seats, right? And as board members, we may want to be able to have read-only access to, especially once we get to the budget book and the digital transparency piece.
Yep.
So that if we have a question, we can go in and look it up or look at the comparisons ourselves. That
is in the planning.
Okay.
Absolutely. You'll each get reviewer access, so then you can look at all of the data. We're going to show you what that looks like.
Cool.
Today as well. When we send out, I just want to give you a warning, and I've already talked to Jen about this. Set up that access the system pushes out an email. It pushes out an email on each and every fund. So there are 60 emails or so that go out on this. So we'll work with your office to weed those out and get your access set up properly. So we're already planning for that.
I can wait.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get into the operational budget piece of this. And normally I would just go into operational budgeting to get into that. And I'll go ahead and do that now. This is how it comes up initially with every one of our funds here. Our budget year is here. So we can change it from 24 to 23, depending on what we want to look at. Also can get an all funds summary here, and gives us an overview of where the budget stands right now, all funds included. The interesting thing about the program is you can get this kind of data in here, but to get a comprehensive data in some form that we're used to looking at, breaking down the individual categories of revenue and expense as a total fund, we have to export that by fund, load it into Finance Enterprise to match that data currently. However, I do believe that Cher will be able to utilize some products that she's comfortable with to mash that data together more effectively in a better format than what we get out of Finance Enterprise. You saw the information I provided in the budget book last year from Finance Enterprise, and we all found it lacking in information. And so we want to improve on this, but this does give us a fund overview. I wish I could make this a little larger.
What level of control do you have over naming and the colors?
It's a great question. We'll have to explore that. I don't know if I'll have to.
Because we call our general fund current expense, right?
And yes, so, we do.
And yeah. It's not a big deal, except for it'd be nice for the language to match the.
Seems like you must, because you have other county specific kinds of things.
And then the color, I only care because public health is getting bigger and county roads bigger and the colors are similar and I'm getting old. So I'm like, well, I need those colors different.
Yes.
It is not a big deal until public health gets as large, it becomes the second largest category. And then
where's public health? Pink?
It's orange.
So, oh, it's down there.
Yeah.
I see.
Like when I looked at it on the list, I was like, what's the difference in color? You can see it a little better up there, but so it's not a big deal. It's just mostly like a old person thing.
And I appreciate the bar graph, but if I had mine, I would want to see a pie graph. But that's just being
petty.
Well, there's so many funds. When you have 60 funds, you only have so many colors, but in varying degrees. And so,
Bill going where?
We just had our colors done. You remember that? How old is
it? I would like to see this more in our Island County color guide colors, right? But this really is the back end of internal portion of it. We've done quite a bit of work on style guide and the digital budget book, and Cher will talk about that a little bit too when we get to that portion, to try to make it look very consistent in its product presentation.
I do like the dashboard.
Of the two, making sure our language and our names match is probably the most significant in terms of storytelling, right? Because I could start saying general fund. I just don't. Like, I say current expense.
Do you know why we have, why we call it current expense?
Historically, I don't know.
I don't know either.
It's built into our culture.
RCW, though, does use current the term. Expense. It uses both general fund and current expense.
I mean, I feel like general fund speaks more to fund balance in my mind, right? Like it's the fund you're moving stuff in and out of, but current expense speaks to like when you think about budgeting, it's your actual expenses. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they're not the same.
Well, I think of current expense as the money I have in an annual budget year to figure out how to meet the supplemental requests or any increasing, or if risk constrained, how are we going to be addressing decreasing needs? Because it's current. That's why it took a while to get my mind wrapped around it, but I like it because it's temporal in some ways in my mind. It's not like road fund, you know, which.
Yeah, I just think of it as the checking account in my mind, like the oversimplistic. I have a checking account and a savings account. I put operations on checking and I put extra money into savings, and then if I have too much extra money, I buy stuff that people want one time. That's my, like, literally this whole process has boiled down to checking and savings for me.
Sure, that's it.
It's a year's worth of your work, and in my mind, it's a
well. And in many ways, that's a great way to conceptualize it, because the public will conceptualize it often in the same way. They're not going to think about restricted funds and. Right. You know, all of the kinds of language we get
very similar to, you can even boil it down to the envelope message, right?
Right. It is so very
really, envelope really could,
yes. You put cash in on payday for this, and this, and you spend out of those.
Janet envelopes. Does not live in the same financial world that we live in. So the envelope system is when you're out of money in that envelope, you don't get to buy any more gas. You're done. You use your envelope.
When I was in the Army, we were paid in cash, and we, my husband and I, actually used an envelope and put our cash in there, and that is
what you had.
That's what we had.
That's pretty close to the mattress method, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might impose that method on someone now that I think about it.
So we can look at this as a fund view. We can look at it as a department view, and it'll change that information there. And then down here, it'll break down each department and show you where the revenue and expense is for those departments. You can look at an object view as well. So it's very flashy.
It is. Yeah, I like flashy.
And this is the proposed budget you're looking at here. So it is live data. Okay, so now I'm going to go over to actually looking at an individual
fund. Before you leave these dashboards, at this point in our process, these dashboards are only available internally, correct?
Correct. But they're, when we get to the digital budget book, you'll see some of the dynamics there.
Okay.
$472,000
up there. On fund
total.
Yeah.
Right. You know, this is, if we're going to change colors, this would be where I would change colors.
So red.
The red, expenditures red. Are way, you know, pink, off pink, lavender, and purple. That's just whatever. It's just too close.
So one of the things I think might would be useful next year when we're in the proposed budget cycle is, I don't think I want to update uses of fund balance or contributions to fund balance. Then you can look at this on a fund by fund basis. What this represents is one of the funds hasn't been updated for the use of fund balance.
Say what you just said again, if you don't want to update fund balance?
Not until we adopt the budget. We'll adopt it with the use. But I think what you were asking is, how do I know how much we're using a fund balance or are contributing to it? This product will show that to you very easily, and I'll show you that when I get over here to you. All right.
No, go ahead. I'm going to hold my question.
So that when you go into operational budget, this is the first thing you see. And you see the very top one does say current expense. I'm not sure why on the... first page, it shows general fund, but I think it's pretty common for it to be called general fund, and that may be just a programming thing at ClearGov. Mm-hmm. But here we do have it named current expense. I'm going to go into that fund now. Because current expense is such a large expense, it does take a little bit longer to load. I've had it take as much as a minute sometimes. Sometimes it's just like that. Because it's web-based, I think it just depends on what's going on at that time. You'll see over here on the left, I have a current expense. This is the live one. I have also copied a current expense file to use in testing for personal services. So when you ask me, well, how much of the personal service budget is current expense for a certain unit, I can take that test product, I can load that in, and then I can tell you exactly how much that unit change, what the dollar amount is, so I can quantify it.
So if we went to public health and we wanted to know how much current expense was going into public health, you would be able to see that.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
If
as a transfer?
Yeah. So if we wanted to look at health or human services or roads or, yeah, I'm picking those three because they have the most, like, if we said, okay, we want to see how much current expenses in there because maybe we want to pull it out, right? Mm-hmm. And make them run off their own dedicated funding sources. You would be able to pull up any of those departments and see what the current expense contribution was and where it was going.
We do that on the spreadsheet, I think, more effectively. So I go through each one and make sure that I know where those transfers are, where they're going to, and then I demonstrate it on one sheet versus going into each fund and trying to locate that. I think that the more powerful pieces of this is when you're talking about your personal services and you're saying, what is a 1% increase and how does it affect these individual funds? So then I load that in and I look at the difference. Okay. And then I can tell you without doing some spreadsheet calculation.
Show if the fund can support the personnel.
Right.
Or the grant. Can you do it with a grant? You count like a grant as a fund or no?
It does. There's not that level of analysis on this program for actual grant budgeting.
So Bart would have to do that in their own personnel management.
Yes. Yes. But you would expect the revenues and the expenditures within those units in those funds that they should be tied together. So as we've looked through these pages that are in the budget book and we're comparing those, I'm not convinced that we have tied those completely. And so that's a development opportunity with each department to say, is this grant directly related to this activity? And making sure that when the departments are entering that data, they're putting it in the right place. And year to year, it's comparable.
I think mostly what I'm trying to make sure I know how to understand on this software is I have seen historically where the current expense transfer grows proportionately. I mean, like based on whatever our wage increases are over time. And then that money gets used to subsidize programs and services that where the fund is falling short or the grant is falling short.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make sure that if that happens, the board's intentional about that, not that we're transferring over X amount of current expense. And then the department is just plugging holes with current expense rather than having those conversations that say you get this many hours on this grant. Unless the board deliberately says, no, we want.
And those should be reviewed on an every year basis.
Absolutely. So that makes so much sense because what you don't want to do is keep accepting grants that have a decreasing overhead. You know, if the margin keeps decreasing for us over time because it doesn't keep up with the cost of inflation or whatever cost of, you know, increases we're experiencing, we end up supplementing the federal government to deliver a program when it was meant to be given to local government. So we have an important story to tell every time we have these mandated programs we must deliver. And yet we have the decreasing capacity to deliver those programs because we don't take that into account. That's a really important point. And I think it's going to be really useful to follow up on that.
And sometimes it's the storytelling choice, right? So in the courts, for example, their grants often fall short. And then the board says, we're going to ensure that that CASA coordinator program is whole because we value it, right?
Right.
But what's happened lots of times is that the money just gets pulled in and dispersed and the board, one, loses its choice, its decision-making authority. Mm-hmm. And two, we're doing exactly what Janet's saying, which is we're subsidizing these programs, there might be a point where we just walk away from the grant and the program and say, look, that current expense money is valued or needed in another area. You know, if we have to do our mandated services, if we have to move it over there and work, then we don't have that option of backfilling the grant anymore, then maybe our decision is we have to walk away. When we're approving these grants, we don't actually see if they fully cover the operations that they're.
Or if we're allocating appropriately across cost centers. I don't know if that's the right word in your lingo, but you know, we're right. Have we allocated bill appropriately, Bill Larson?
Across funds.
You know, across funds to make sure that. So that we don't end up with an unintentional shortfall right. sometime in the future as well. I mean, it's ironic that the other decision we can make is, can we go back and renegotiate? And it's ironic, the first time I ever had to learn this lesson was a respite program. We were operating in Oak Harbor for military families with children who had
diverse abilities or who had special needs, and the federal government wouldn't pay any indirect cost. So we had to go in and negotiate every single direct cost so we can make the program work. But that was a bazillion years ago.
So
like that feature.
I do.
Built out for us, especially.
Yeah. I do. It's important.
So I have right now. There are three levels of users in the operational budget. There is primary, and those are usually the people that are in all of the product. So all of the funds. So Sharon and I are in all of the funds and can make edits there. There is the requester. And so those are the department level folks that are making those entries. And then there's reviewer, which is what you'll be set up as. So you'll be able to go in the product.
But only you and Cher are at that primary or high level play, right? I think they're not in order. It says requester, primary, reviewer. Primary is YouTube so that you can protect the integrity of the data.
Okay, so good. We're the editors. Our requesters are here. Requesters can turf.
Turf.
That's not a technical term. They can assign a sub requester. So
they like surf and turf. Sorry.
That's your name. Yes. So
you're in your weekend already, like, aren't you, Janet?
I wish.
Works is a huge department, and there are people that are more knowledgeable about their components than maybe the main person.
Sure.
They can assign portions of their budget for them to develop, mm-hmm. and then it gets rolled back to the person that has assigned it. They review it, and then that main editor, main requester, is the one that submits that budget.
How hard is that to assign, reassign? So if somebody leaves, is it easy to reassign that work?
It is. Yep.
So you're not locked in once you put the email in that's the contact forever?
No. And we have a way to say someone leaves suddenly or someone has to go out on leave suddenly. We have a way to force that closed and then reassign it.
Okay.
So we have the power. We're all powerful here in this product.
What this reminds me is that, you know, every department does their work plan every year, but there's things like having to learn how to do the new software system that we don't put in people's work plans, but those take time.
They absolutely do. Yeah.
You're right.
All right. So then I'm going to go back to the dashboard for current expense. I'm going to change myself to a reviewer so that you'll see what that looks like as we're going through the budget. When we open up the budget, all we have is a baseline. Then we send out invitations to the budget to the requesters, and then this gets populated. Once they have submitted their budget, you'll see this blue line go across the screen. When we review the requests, you'll see that what we've reviewed, and then internal review. I haven't spent a lot of time with this portion of it. It does say finalized only because I put a set point in there when we're going into a proposed budget. So it allows me to save it.
Gives you a deadline.
Yeah, it allows me to save it. And I'll show you. I'm going to expand this so you can see it on a bigger view.
Can I ask him while you're saving it? So the requester level. What expectation? So we've had a couple of instances where the board is catching where your proposals or your words say X, and then we go into the numbers and we're seeing a number that doesn't match what was in maybe the supplemental request. Mm-hmm. That bothers me, mm-hmm. because it's important detail and accountability. Who is responsible for making sure that what's here in the spreadsheets that we're looking at and what is in the narrative, both in the overarching summary and narrative and the the supplemental narrative matches, because we shouldn't be responsible as a board for catching those mismatches.
You're right. You're correct. There's a couple of push points in your question. So certainly before it's submitted, the supplemental requests are submitted. One, supplemental request should not be in the budget at all.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
So that shouldn't be in there. We should have caught that when we went through.
Who's we? You two or the requester?
Us. We're the final check.
Okay. So, but there should be a series of checks.
Absolutely. The reviewer shouldn't submit it that way in the first place. Okay. Right.
Thank you.
So, but we should check that. And so the one that we found yesterday, I should have caught that. Right. So
I'm not laying blame. I'm actually trying to lay out process improvements and direction we give next year that says, for clarification, you are responsible for making sure that your budget narrative and your spreadsheet match. Please remember not to include supplements. So we're learning some things this year. And yes. The reason I'm saying this is I want to make sure our directions next year highlight the process improvements we're learning in this first year.
This whole system implementation has been a opportunity for process improvement. There have been some push points, big changes from how we've done this before. The export or import of personnel services into the budget actually happens after they've submitted their budget. So after they submitted their budget, they have to have an opportunity to true up their numbers mm-hmm. and to be able to submit that cohesive package. Mm-hmm. Right now, we haven't built enough time in the budget to do that. Mm-hmm. So that timeline probably has to start a little earlier. We need to be able to push that information back to the departments so they can true up their written document and it so it matches for you and the review.
I think the timeline is definitely something to talk about. We have to adopt on certain dates. There's no flexibility there. So I get that part, but I'm also sensitive to the fact that halfway through the year, some of the departments are just getting their legislative allocations, yep. right? They don't know what some of their funding and program streams will be. They haven't really had a lot of time to talk to us about program goals and different types of things. So, I mean, moving it has benefits. It also has some logistical drawbacks. I think, like, we collectively need to figure that out as a team, like a county team.
And it almost goes to what you said, where Cher's creating a user manual so that they're not in the budget once a year. A budget in some ways should be like a strategic plan. We shouldn't just do it once a year and be in it once a year, right? The departments should be in it quarterly at a minimum.
Well, they are, but on the finance enterprise side, right? So that all of
So that yeah. syncing of the finance enterprise to ClearGov
yes.
is okay, yeah. fair.
Yep. So they should absolutely should be looking at their actual progress compared to budget.
On a regular basis.
Yep. So the other piece of that too is when we ask the departments to provide that executive summary, is are we going to ask them to maybe not include their numbers they've calculated and rely on the information we export and give that to them ahead of time? How we put that package together in your budget book absolutely should be cohesive. Right now, we have to develop that better and as Jill stated, as a team to decide what that should look like. Okay, so each fund is individually programmed in here. One of the push points of the program in operational budgeting is that there are GL change limitations. It is programmed by fund, and so a department can't just go in and look at their budget. They have to go into each fund. When we assign them as users, we're assigning them specifically to each one of their cost centers. So when they open up their fund or their access as an editor, which they're all signed editor, or not editor, submitter,
requester.
Requester, it only brings up their data. And the same with the personnel module. They're only getting to see their people in that program. Okay, so when there's expenditures at the expenditure tab and there's a revenue tab, and you can expand it all, which is a lot of information, or you can do it by department and look at the submissions by department. These little arrows here allow you to drill down. I'm going to drill down on IT predominantly because they've made the best use of subline budgeting. So I want to show.
Congratulations to them.
Yes, they have done a good job, which is great for us because when we want to know how much they have budgeted for, I'm going to go down to services professional. I drill down here and I can see that they've budgeted Northwest Technologies for $36,000 and other services for cabling for $10,000. There's a difference in what they budgeted from the adopted budget in 2023, $35,000 to $46,000. So it allows us to go into a deeper dive on a department level to see, well, what are you budgeting and why?
Mm-hmm. That, because remember yesterday my frustration with not knowing what services professional was as we looked at some of these line items, not being able to see it identified as something that, you know, services professional in planning next year is going to have a large line item in comp plan development that won't be there in 3 years. And so I like being able to drill down. So when we have reader access, read only, or whatever you call it here.
Reviewer.
Will we be able to drill down on these line items but not change them, right? We can see why is suddenly they have a variance of 100,000 on professional services? What's that about?
So I'm going to change myself to a reviewer.
Okay.
And it'll show you exactly what you're going to see once it loads again.
Is it weird that I'm kind of geeking out thinking this is super fun?
No,
it is super fun.
I'm glad you guys love it so that we don't have to.
There's been times I've created bald spots, but
yeah. Pulling your hair out. There's medication for that. We have a...
So like I said, sometimes it takes a while. It's a very large
populating. Probably. Because the internet just went down all over Washington State.
Oh, that would be bad.
It happened.
So you can see.
There you go.
You have, as a reviewer, you have less tabs at the top. However, you should have the same information access. So I'm going to drill down.
Go back to IT.
Yep, going back to IT. So I wanted to go down to another one that they itemized really well, and that's software support and hosting. That last year they budgeted $793,985, and their proposal this year is $973,000. I think that John Kent was prepared to talk about these different things when we met with him last week, but that we ran out of time.
Click on that, open it up.
So then he's itemized each one of the budgeted pieces.
Oh wow.
In there. So they spend a lot of time on what these are, and this is an opportunity to say, well, what does this do? Who is this for? And also, you know, when we're looking at things like Finance Enterprise, we're spending $59,000 a year just for Finance Enterprise. We're spending $55,000 a year on ClearGov. So when we look at this, is it working for us? And want to have a more robust program, we're already spending about $100,000 a year for something that doesn't necessarily work for us that well. So those are opportunities for discussion about how well something works for us or doesn't.
Can you summarize on how much we pay in ongoing licenses and services just in general for the county? Did you ask a question like that?
Well, the licenses and services related specifically to software. Yeah. I think that's what this is.
Okay.
Yeah, 973.
Yeah, 000. I really appreciate seeing all the different software licenses that we have. That is really very informative.
So we'd really like to see that the departments use this more, and I think we can ask them to do that as we develop this product some more. So
Jill asked a good question, which I think is interesting, which is this a database that you can query? So she said, if I wanted to know how much we're spending on user seats to user licenses, is there a place in this where you can query this database, or do you just have to know where to go?
I think that the simple answer to that is you have to know where to look for it, but it also is what's programmed in here. So I don't see in there how many seats it says. So I think that's a schedule we would have to request from IT.
That's fair.
And maybe even part of their budget package. Show us what the services are that are being supported now.
I know SQL's the one everybody knows, but the idea that you can go into a database and write a question and they pick up your keywords like IT licenses, and it just picks that up, and then you get an answer, and then it says you have this many licenses. And then Jill says, well, how many of those are in whatever?
Planning Tech Fund, right?
Right.
So if I could query and say, how much software have we put on the technology fee that gets collected in? I think
it's exactly right.
Public work and planning.
Mm-hmm.
And then to see that, and then to see if what the fee is generating is enough to cover the license.
Exactly.
Because we haven't raised that fee in a long time. This is telling me right here that the initial purchase was covered, but I don't know if the ongoing operations of the licensing programs are covered by those fees.
The last time I looked at that, it was.
But yeah. That's a great example of the kind of when we're assigning to do, are we going to update fees, or we're going to, you know, whatever that is, or we get a mandate from the state that says no longer can you collect fines and penalties, right? That's one of the things where the threats we're facing. So we can then query a database that says, what's the impact of this? And what can we do differently? And so that's why I asked the question about a queryable database, is it gives, if not the board, at least the county administrator, the technological tool to do that.
I understand. But this database is designed for something different than what you're talking about.
But so, we need, I hear you, but I'm saying in some ways for fiduciary reasons, we almost need both. So whether that's in Finance Enterprise, which I doubt, or whether it's here, it's one of these things I would say, Susan, is a parking lot to, I think this is probably a queryable database because I've already watched you do it. So it's something that if you talk to ClearGov, could you say, what are the query functions and are those hidden, or can the, what's your title again? Reviewers, submitters, and I don't know,
requesters.
Primary, whatever I haven't quite mastered the language here, obviously, but where the primary has the ability to query this database to answer a strategic question the board or is asking, or you are asking of the requesters. That's the parking lot question I have, because I bet somewhere in the back end of this is a queryable database. I would guess. It's just a guess.
Cher has utilized a software platform called Power BI, and she can speak about that a little more. We are already almost at an hour, and we do have three more sections to go over with you.
Okay, so I'll hold my question, and you can take it offline.
We can put that on.
Good for you.
So, okay, so while we're in operational budgeting, I also want to show you how salaries and wages get imported into how they show up in the operational budget from the personnel budgeting. So when we drill down, you can see anytime you see this little icon here, this arrow here, it means that there are sublines. So when the budget gets imported, it brings across the employee ID and the title of the position, but it doesn't give a name to the person.
Can I ask, we haven't gotten to this yet, but while we're in here, when we're looking at really how far you can drill down, when we eventually get to the place where citizens can look at our budget, will they be able to drill down to this level?
No, the budget book side doesn't give this level of detail. This is more for the budget development. And Cher will be able to show you the level of detail that we are able to drill down in that portion. So all of these under salaries and wages and personnel benefits, all of this information comes from the personnel budgeting, with a small exception for leave payouts. We will program those in on the operational side versus the personnel side. And also some overtime in public works gets programmed differently there, because you don't want to necessarily program that by person, which is what the personnel portion of it does.
Oh, okay.
And I'll show you that here in just a moment. Capital comes in the exact same way. So when you look at the capital budgeting, and I would need to go to a different fund, it shows as subline by project and gives you that project title. And so you know where those expenditures are coming from when you drill down into those funds. So if you want to look at REIT and know in REIT, what are the projects programmed in there? Mm-hmm. You'll be able to see that in that.
Excellent.
Program.
Okay.
Quite get to that. Okay. So I'm going to go over to the personnel budgeting side. I spent a lot of time in this year, where Cher worked on capital budgeting. I worked on personnel budgeting. She also worked on the digital budget book. So I'm going to go ahead and dive into this program. So we open up a separate budget for each year. When we open up a separate budget, we have the option of pulling data over if we chose. I didn't do that this year. I wanted a fresh sheet of paper to be able to program it the way that I thought that it would flow best. So it also has a dashboard in here, and it's going to pop up right now. It shows you employees, it shows vacancies. It doesn't show any new positions or future hires, because those future positions or new positions that have been requested have not been approved by the board.
Click on vacancy. So I understand what that looks like.
Yes, let me go. So we go to positions. And like I said, we program by employee. And then if there's not an employee in that seat, we program the position.
So yeah. those are right now, today, more or less, vacancies.
They are. Well, at the point in time we program.
At the point in time, sure. Yes. So when it said 28% of the positions are vacant, that was in reference to right, you know, this
at
summer.
At that point in time. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Which was it around June.
Okay.
Is that sheet, that information printable or downloadable?
If we can export it. Yep, and that's what I do when I'm doing FTE reconciliation.
Okay.
I export the all of the employees and all of the vacancies, and then I sort it and compare it and do a reconciliation on each department.
Okay. If possible, I'd kind of like to get that early so that, I mean, I'm guessing everybody would, because I'd like to be able to talk to HR and the department heads to get a sense of, I mean, I might know off the top of my head what some of those are, but to understand their functional significance. Mm-hmm. And also the last time the position was used, I think HR might know that.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could get that maybe a little bit early.
We will be able to do that this next year. I spent a lot of time this year on programming and the PCN and position number project.
Yeah.
So when I did that, all of these job, it's job codes in ClearGov, but in Finance Enterprise, it's a PCN or a position number. So for programming, we had a couple of different places we could do programming for these employees. Last year we did program the PCNs and position numbers in here, but there was some coding issues with it that did not work in the program. So for instance, let me back up just a little bit to the data model manager. So in the data model manager, this is where we build each one of the units and the benefits and pay associated with them. We also build the wage schedules in here. So I've got a unit for 1845, 1845I. I have elected officials because their benefits are slightly different. Non-rep exempt. So those are the salaried employees that are non-rep. I have the hourly employees that are non-rep. The sheriff deputies. Oh, nope, that's corrections. And the deputies are here. This is the sheriff's staff, Teamsters. And then I have a category for temporary, part-time, and on-call because mm-hmm. there are no benefits there. So I want to be able to tailor that mm-hmm. to those different categories. So I did reprogram those.
So much work.
But we did this one time. This information will roll to next year.
But it was right. still a lot of work to do the, I mean,
yes.
I wouldn't downplay the amount of work that went into getting it to this point.
Right. So when I reprogrammed or redefined what those job codes looked like, I looked at each one of these groups as independent units, and I programmed the units so that when I look at the job code, I know immediately what department it's in and what unit they belong to. And then the very last two digits is the position number.
You were able to get the position numbers in just two digits?
No, the position number is four digits.
Oh, okay.
Position, so the, but the first, I'll show you, I'll just go into
is
one.
It a, it is it, it's a seven or eight digit number, I can't count it.
It is, so, go into the wage schedules. And there's a couple of ways you can navigate in here. So every seat that the county has, every authorized seat has a job code.
Mm-hmm.
So the job code starts with the department number. So this job code is specific to Public Works. This middle section, or this, I'm sorry, this first two digits is the department number. This middle section, the four digits, is specific to Planner 4. One of the programming issues we had with this was that we had planners. Well, we had planners on like six different levels, but if you're going to program their salaries and wages, mm-hmm. which we do here, you have to be able to tie it to a level.
Yeah.
So if you have these four different ones. So doing that inventory and figuring out, well, how many planner fours do we have? What, you know, what level are our employees at? We are have an active inventory of authorized job codes. So these, you know, if you do have someone that goes from a planner two to a planner three, we're going to go in, we're going to turn off the planner two, and we're going to turn on a planner three. So that active inventory is always at the net authorized positions.
I want to say that I've had to do this exact exercise a couple different times in my career, including once or twice here, and I know exactly how much work this is, so I commend you. That is a lot of work.
HR and I worked very closely on this. We went back and forth many times on the first, just the four-digit identifying the job. So I went to each one of the contracts, and what was defined in the contracts, those were the job codes that we created. Mm-hmm. And we identify job codes that need to be rectified in the contract. And Catherine is actively working on those. So that was a good exercise as well, is this doesn't fit into the package. And if it's not in the package, that means it's not a contracted position. So that was pretty important to do too. So I do have a job code list that I can provide to you at another time that says what each one of those four digits ties to. But the first, so that first number in the digit, this tells me that that is an 1845 position. If it starts with one, it's a non-exempt position. So that ties into that the 600, 700, you know, the codes mm-hmm. that we already have for the bargaining units, so that we can figure out, well, which one is this? So when I'm coding it in another section of the program, I know which unit it is, and I can tie that in, and I'll show you that in just a moment. So we also programmed additional pay that in there so that we could budget that appropriately.
Are those our only additional pays?
Yep.
Well, that's good to know. There's only four. One time in the sheriff's office, there was like five just in the sheriff's office.
Well, so when you look at
special needs, they're more under special.
Yep. So if you look at the description, you can see that. Where's my description? Where did it? Oh, right up here. Reserve liaison, field training officer. I need to edit this. Emergency vehicle operations course instructor, defensive tactics instructor. All of these things that are defined in the contract, but they're all tied to 3%. Okay. So we don't need to separate those out in here and then tie it to people, which is a lot more of a heavy lift. Mm-hmm. And year to year will change depending on the personnel that are assigned.
Right.
So I programmed this specifically this way. Same with the benefits. So I didn't take under the medical, I tied together things that are pretty static. Medical, VIVA, dental, vision, those tie together. The HRA and HSA plan have those reimbursement pieces. I didn't take the premium separate from the amount that we give in reimbursement or the amount that we give in the HRA mm-hmm. contribution. I tied those to a calculation so that when we are assigning those, we have a static dollar amount, but it's at what level the employee is at. So I can do a drop down on that.
Are we able in the system to say, okay, in 2023, the employees used 32% of the HRA dollars that were available for them?
So when I was in the auditor's office, we had implemented the HRA plan, and I did a mm-hmm. analysis on that on a monthly basis and then built on it on a year over year.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're evaluating that usage,
yeah,
we budget for a 60% utilization. 60%
is what we're budgeting for. Because when we started that whole thing, we budgeted at 80. Mm-hmm. We discovered that people are using 25 or 30%. So we're budgeting at 60?
60.
Okay. That's very conservative of us.
And I don't have a current evaluation on that, but I could.
That's fine.
I think that would be an interesting thing to bring forward, though, when we're talking about benefits.
Yeah.
Okay, so those program pieces are there. Next year, even with this programming, I'm probably going to take all of the medical. So I have medical for corrections, medical for deputies, and then medical for all other, where is it? All other employees, HSA and HRA. I could take that and even boil it down to one drop down for each of the employees and even streamline it. More.
So every year I'm always get confused by how we balance out what we budget and versus what we actually spend. And so, it's okay. So as an example, we budget 60% utilization of the HRA. People are spending 35, 40% maybe. And that's the case with everything. You know, a department budgets a certain number of salaries, but actually 28% of the positions remain vacant and so on. So is it after the end of the year when you do your budget reconciliation that you account for all of those dollars that were budgeted and that are not spent, so we know exactly how much money we really have, so that when we start off with our fund balance at the beginning of this exercise, it is based on actual dollars, budgeted dollars.
It's incorporated into the current expense reconciliation. So I go back and I reconcile all of the fund balances
mm-hmm.
there. And that the budget to actual, that piece of it, fund balance contribution or use is not a function to a budget to actual.
Mm-hmm.
It is a function of how much revenue did we receive? How much expenditure did we have? If you budget at a certain point, you're building that budget at to balance those things. Theoretically, those things work together. So if you don't spend that money, you budgeted for it, you balanced your budget based off of that, then you should have money that flows through with vacancies and such. So right now you budget fully loaded. A good way to evaluate your budget may be, how much do we expect to have filled position?
Right. We budget fully loaded, but we know from this that 28 positions are vacant.
Right.
66.
Yeah, well, I was very surprised by that. And I actually went back to last year's budget here, and it was very similar. I couldn't believe, just by looking at the open positions, that we had that many.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I looked back at the reconciliations, like, yep, we do. So
is that data that was harder to get when we were just in the FE financial enterprise product?
We relied heavily on department input on those and then reconciling year to year. So, functionally, we do the same thing, but we have a product that allows us to program and export and manipulate it faster.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really great thing too. So I want to try to move forward a little more quickly. It's already 11:07. I'm going to go to the allocations real quick.
Okay, it's fine.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay, so the allocations is where we code the employees, and this we take it by position. So we go from the unit wage schedules, and then each position gets coded uniquely. When we had programmed last year, we didn't have a unique job code for every seat, and so therefore I couldn't program the coding in here to flow through to the operational budget effectively. I had to go into the positions and code employee by employee.
Oh,
and that's where I got the carpal tunnel,
uh-huh.
Right? And so now this, when I create a position over in units and I come into this menu, these two unhighlighted spots right here, I can either manually assign the IDs or I can automatically assign the IDs. If I've done my work correctly over here in the units and the wage schedules, this should flow through correctly.
So
most of the time it does.
That's sort of my question. You can do this offline with me.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So current expense, and that's the whole coding now enables us to drill down to basically a cost center,
mm-hmm.
an expense,
mm-hmm.
and balance out,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
see what, because that's, and I'll do this offline and we'll get out on what the numbers are,
yep.
Page and
code,
and all that.
We can talk about that later. Yep.
Yep. Okay. That's
so
exciting.
Yeah. What this portion doesn't do automatically is, you see these ones that are split out.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have to do those.
Oh, that makes sense.
By hand.
Yeah.
And some of them, like in health, are separated out into like nine. So if I
that's what Commissioner Johnson had really worked to try to get us more efficient on, was to not have. So we may want to look at those that are, because that was a big effort.
I can't remember, Jill, when did you really push this issue of not being allocated a cost more than three cost centers? Yeah, so
and I there was some work done on it, but we still have a long way to go. And so I've been talking with Sean Morris about a more effective way to budget for public health.
I'm sorry. You were talking.
So I don't necessarily think the way that we do it right now is the most effective way. And public health changes these codes on a quarterly basis. So when I went in and programmed this, it had changed already from when we went and loaded it into operation. So we had to redo the work. And for what? It's going to change in a quarter anyway. We need to really talk about how we are budgeting and tracking for public health.
And aggregating those differently. So for a couple of reasons, I mean, you were doing it for accountability of we promised to do this work. Are we truly doing this work with 2% of a staff person?
You're not. That's my issue.
That was a fundamental issue. That was where it came from. But there's also an inefficiency, an operational inefficiency to have it disaggregated out like this.
What it does is it allows little shortfalls to get backfilled easily, right? Mm-hmm. Because maybe it's 2% here and 3% there. And all of a sudden you have 40% of your budget's current expense. But when you look at different positions, you're like, well, it's not worth pulling out 2%. It's not worth this. The problem, and I think it'd be good to have Sean come because you're talking about it from a budget standpoint, and this mm-hmm. shows it very clearly now. Mm-hmm. The problem is that individual employee cannot work successfully in five program areas. And what happened to us was COVID. So our FEPA person, the money was spread out to eight people to make eight positions whole. And then all of a sudden we had a public health crisis mm-hmm. and there was no person who was in charge of that program. There were eight people who were billing into the program. That is not what we're about. We are about program service delivery. If we get money, somebody's responsible for delivering that program.
Right.
Or two people are,
yep.
or up to three people are. And that's the end of it. If you simply can't, it's not functional to have people in all those areas. Nobody's in charge. Nobody's doing the work. Nobody's accountable. All we're doing, and it was finally agreed to at this table by the department, all we are doing is making employees whole. That is not nothing, but it's not our mandate. Our mandate right. is to deliver programs and services. And this is telling a story that says we're making people whole. We're not delivering these programs and services.
Yep. So, and I agree, but the one thing I think about is having multiple fund services that may deliver
in the same area.
So I'm looking at food, for example. So if you have, but that goes to how you were looking at aggregating medical, right? You were talking about sort of lumping these up, right? You can do this maybe in future conversation, yes, but
yeah, let's maybe, I'm ahead. Still trying. The way I think sometimes is I get a snippet here, and all of a sudden one day it's a cohesive thought and I'm not quite there yet. So that one thing
that takes longer as we get older.
Well, you're right.
I shouldn't say that, but I...
So the one thing I did want to show you is there is a way to filter so that the way I wanted to drill down to public health is I pulled up the job code. Remember I told you the job code starts with the department number. Mm-hmm. So I can just drill down to those employees when I'm trying to look for them quickly. Or if I know what that job code is, I know I need to code this one employee differently. I grab that job code and I pull that one up and then I can get right to it very effectively rather than do, searching down through the data. So this all flows into the employees and their coding under positions and then under vacancies. And then the departments review this area of the budget to see are all their employees there, and they should be receiving just their employees that they're looking at. And then the vacancies.
And because this is going to be a
more or less static. This will be only updated like once a year when you're doing your budget, correct?
Yeah, the employee portion, we'll upload the, we can upload the, do a bulk upload on the employees, which thank goodness we can do that. That makes it a lot easier. And so then that coding just flows through to the employee. So when I just look at one employee, all of their coding for their salary and benefits is already there mm-hmm. when I pull that in. I talked about last year, we had position number and employee number, or position number and PCN number. So we were using the job code and position code like we do traditionally. Well, there's no need to do that, but what we really needed is a way to identify what benefits employees are receiving.
Right.
So we use this column to identify what benefits they're receiving. And then I was able to filter this and do a bulk change to give them that benefit. And so it automatically calculated that. That was slick. It was great. I spent a lot of time last year on drop downs and getting to the right benefit. And so I didn't have to do that this year. So that was really exciting. Okay, I want to get over to request manager and scenarios. So
before we do that, can I see the dashboard for the personnel again? So this is an important thing for us to be paying attention to. In our communication employees, is how much of their total salary is this? We always talk about, well, this is a $65,000 a year job, and we're only talking about this part. But this part is huge.
Right. What's the green part?
Vacancies. Is that what that says?
Yes. Or vacancies. So
you're right.
Yeah, I didn't mean the vacancies.
Right. Yes, the benefits.
The benefits.
Yeah. I was just making sure I didn't need to add it in there.
Yeah.
Which I'll add it all in.
Yeah. You know, when we're looking at this wheel, to me, that's not how I would want to design that data, because vacancies mean salaries and benefits. But we're breaking out salaries, wages, and benefits here,
mm-hmm.
right? We have these other categories, but we don't have anything in positions. You can see up here, we don't have anything positions or future hires. So it's not demonstrated on this wheel. Here's the data down here. But so this kind of skews the data a little bit when you are combining that category there. So it's actually a little different. It's probably representative, but salaries and wages are 100%.
It should split out the same way.
Yes,
though.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And the data's in there. I'm not sure why this graphic does that way. Okay. So I'm really cheating Cher out of her really big aha moment.
What?
And so I want to move this ahead because I really want you to see the other pieces of it. So I'm going to skip request manager. It's an area where a department can say with their supplemental budget, they want this position, they tie it to an existing code, and it will help calculate it. But what it does in there is it calculates it at fully loaded. So I end up having to do some back end manipulation to make that a little more reality. The reality of it is if the board approves a position, I'll go back in and program it properly under a vacancy. Okay. I wouldn't put it in there. But there is a way to turn on a position when it's approved under scenarios. So in the scenarios, we have a baseline, but then I create a scenario for what we would load into the budget. And I'm able to make changes and figure out what expenses need to be in the budget for each category. So what's powerful about this is that once I know what those changes are and I put these in here, I can create another scenario that does a comparison. So when I go up to view all scenarios, when I was being asked, well, how much does this cost? How much does that cost? I used a mirror of the first one to track the changes, to provide you another level of detail by job category or group when there are changes there. And I can do it for each one of the areas of salary, additional pay, benefits, new positions. So all of these are turned off. They're not included.
Vacancies are all included. You see, they're all green. But I have to go through on an individual basis by a work group, and that's where this number ties in for me. So I know which one it pertains to tie in that percentage.
So new position requests, those are the ones that the supplementals.
There should be supplemental, but not every department used this. Health God, used
that's
it.
Just a very few. We have, I mean,
we do have a lot of positions.
Public Works has 15 all by themselves. Yeah.
But for me, I wasn't going to spend a lot of extra time putting these in here.
Sure.
Because we are using the supplemental sheets. We're not using this part of the product.
That's fair.
And I wouldn't want this program this way because it loads it fully. And then I have to go in and make a manual adjustment, a negative adjustment to this max benefits, because the benefits are not fully loaded for each employee because we have separate plans. And that's a opportunity for change next year.
Okay.
So once that is nice and tight, then I go into operational budgeting, and then I load those into each one of the funds. And then we do the same thing with capital budgeting. And so at that point, I am going to turn this presentation over to share for her portion. So one of the other things I did want to say through this process was that Catherine would often come to me and ask me, what does this cost look like? I go into this tool, I'm able to calculate it within seconds.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great.
That's great. Really wonderful. So you can go to the next.
Mouse. Thank you. So I don't feel bad that you took a lot of time, because that's pretty much the meat on the bone, these two programs, operational budgeting and personnel budgeting. That's the bulk of the work behind everything. I'm getting into the capital budgeting and the digital budget book, which are the fun parts. You already have mine.
That's all right.
Okay.
It's kind of covering that piece. You just go ahead and use that tab.
Okay. So right now I'm going to go over capital budgeting. This year was the first year that we implemented capital budgeting. Mm-hmm. And this is the dashboard page. As you can see, we submitted 160 capital requests between three departments: Public Works, Facilities, and IT.
It was between three, so the sheriff's three car or five cars aren't in there.
Well, they're probably under Facilities, probably.
No, okay. Because of the way the sheriff's cars are budgeted, the money for that is contained in current expense, mm-hmm. and so until he uses it, we do a budget amendment to change the budget for that specifically. So it that is not included in there, mm-hmm. in the CIP plan.
That's one of the things that I've struggled to figure out how to do that, like, because it's there but it's not there. We know we've promise that, like, is there a way to do a reserve? And but it doesn't.
Well, we do that differently, but
you follow my question. It's like we don't want to dedicate it, mm-hmm. thus taking away opportunity dollars that we need to have. But does the budget have a way to truly code and placeholder that? Is one of the things I've struggled with.
We could probably talk about that later in the budget process.
Go ahead. It's just one of the questions I've had in the last
40 minutes.
Okay. So this is, I'm on the editor view, right? Oh, no, this is actually reviewer.
So this is what it'll look like when you...
When you log in, this is what you will see.
But that's $143 million over the next five years.
Six years.
Okay. Yes. What is neat about the dashboard is that you're able to filter by budget view, which defaults to the most current view. This is where you can view by scenarios. We create those scenarios for you, at your request. And so you can view by scenarios, but it defaults to the most recent one.
So is one of the scenarios current year?
It's just 2024 request.
Well, this budget view, I created different versions for different purposes. As I was testing, like there's a test version. There's really only one version that is really relevant, because the other versions are like historical data. The most current version is the one that is the most current numbers that we imported into operational budgeting.
The adopted CIP plan.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we can see that 2024, we're looking at about 22.8 million, correct?
Yep. Yes. So that's the thing, when I look through these filter.
The top four part. Like the
Army. Oh,
levels.
I see. Not total.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
But we can, and this is looking at a 6-year.
I need better.
So this is, you can filter. You can look at all 6 years at one time. And then it generates, the dashboard will create these numbers for you. Mm-hmm. We're right now in looking at capital costs. We can look at funding sources. And as we do that, we have the funds listed over here where we have allocated the funding sources.
Can you then click on the funding source and have it tell you all the projects that are in that capital area? So if we clicked on like REIT2, for example, we'd be able to see all the projects that we put under that fund.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So let me go ahead and do that for you. The best way to do that is I would go up here on your filters.
Okay.
These are all your filters. There's scenario version, there's years. So let's say we just want to look at 2024, and we can filter by departments. We can either look at all the departments or just some.
Okay.
We can also look at.
That's where you'd get to read two. Just click on that one.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Or this is the type of project. Yes, right here. Apply. And then it brings up the data. And then this is, we're on the funding source tab. So this shows the funding source data. And then if we click on capital costs, you can see the capital cost numbers.
That 19 projects or?
Yes.
Individual.
Mm-hmm. So if I return back to kind of the default, which is where we see everything all at once, the dashboard is pretty nifty. I mean, you can isolate your views to the information. Let me make sure this took, because if I don't hit apply. But this is how you would want to, you know, if you want to look at your information, you want to put certain departments or certain funds together and isolate those views, you can do that. Mainly, I would use this filter thing, but you do have also the ability to interact with your information by clicking on, you know, the graphs. The graphs, though, are a little more limited. Up here, if you're driving through the filters, you have more control over what your data is going to look like. But if you go onto your opening screen, you will see all the projects listed according to categories. And we have three types. We have capital equipment, and we have capital improvement, and then we have other. Is how we grouped these different projects. And as you can see, some of these groupings, you'll see that they match the total numbers on the CIP plan. Mm-hmm. You might be already familiar with some of the numbers. We did add, included in this, in addition to the CIP plan, there are additional projects, ENR projects, stuff that we want to get into that constitute as capital, but we want to get them into the capital
budgeting module, because once we get them in the capital budgeting module, this is where you want to, this is where you want to, your data to start when it comes to capital projects, all projects, capital projects, because I got to go to editor view.
So I do have a kind of a policy question. So up on the I think it was types, or I forget what the category was, where it had facilities read to, bless his heart. He put his projects into read to capital projects. But we often wonder for public works, which capital projects they're putting in REIT 1 and which in REIT 2, so that we know how much money we have left in the two different buckets. And it looks like Public Works was not differentiating in that way. Is there another place where we can see that, or is Public Works just waiting until the end and then they just move money over from one to the other when there's some left?
They do outline exactly which fund it's coming from.
So where is that done, shown at?
So you want to look at REIT 2 and
REIT 2. We want to know what, not just facilities, but what Public Works REIT 2 projects.
Can they put projects on REIT 2? I forget what the REITs can do.
We just got that yesterday. I have to look at it.
Public Works came, some of their projects.
Yeah. Because REIT 2 is the one that we're not putting that pressure on, right?
Yeah.
They can put,
Trying to find the best way to.
Where did I put that? Acquisition, construction, reconstruction, repair, and replacement, rehabilitation.
So then it is a good question on, are they utilizing the fund or just defaulting to the easier funding sources of roads?
There it is. It should have been the wrong place.
And they could probably do the design of this crosswalk on Regents.
I mean, really?
I need a sidewalk. Gosh darn it.
You don't get sidewalks. You don't like sidewalks. We're a rural county.
I have a spot where I have to break my own policy.
Oops. We can take a look at that drill down.
There's a way to isolate. It might have been because we named these funding sources over here, and we kind of did that afterwards because when we created the forms or the input forms for the departments, we did not have include the funding sources. Mm-hmm. I thought that the funding sources, the departments would be able to add them, but they weren't able to. I have to reprogram those ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So we did those as we backtracked. So it's kind of a learning, lessons learned. And so the way that we broke out these here is just kind of an afterthought. Mm-hmm. I had to add the funding sources kind of last minute to get everything together, because at first there was nothing on the funding source page after we thought we were done. So we can definitely make that where you're able to distinguish all the REIT 1 and REIT 2 spending. But there is a way to find that in here. There's so many ways to get to your data, and I'll show you the other ways. But this, as I said, is the dashboard. Mm-hmm. I'm in editor mode right now, and while I'm here, I might as well show you. So it was a lot of work. 160 capital requests were submitted this year. This is the bulk of it. This is the groundwork. Next year, it's not going to be like that. So I'm going to view office. I'm just going to show you how it works. I'm not really going to create one. I'm just showing you. When I go to create next year's capital plan, CIP plan, mm-hmm. I'll put in all this stuff, but it does say all previously submitted multi-year requests from the prior year will be carried forward into this capital budget. Mm-hmm. So then all we have to do is just tweak, remove the the projects that have been completed and then add the new ones. Mm-hmm. And then usually we have more definitive numbers for the outlying years.
Yeah, great. That's great.
And again, we're able to create scenarios for you upon your request. If you want to look at, you know, certain projects, what will we do with this project? But if we put these other projects on hold, we can create these scenarios and withhold certain projects. When we get into them, we can create them for you. When you come in as reviewer, operating costs and operating revenue, we did not ask for information at that level. We only ask for capital costs and funding sources. So those are this is really the only relevant option that you'll have. I'm going to return back to, before I turn back to reviewer, the two tabs that you won't see on your screen as reviewer is the contributors, where we set up the people. And likewise, you can see with the other modules that Susan and I are the only editors. And there's also an audit trail tab, which we haven't had needed to use yet, but it's also there. It's nice to know. It shows everybody's, you know, when they make changes to the system, it is timestamped all the time.
Excellent.
So now I'm going to go back to the reviewer tab. And I'm just going through this as if you were going to get into this and look at this. This is good supplemental information to look at while you are looking at your hard copy budget book. We, instead of opening up to the dashboard like the editor view did, it opens up to the request manager tab. This is a data table type tab, spreadsheet kind of looking tab. And it lists all of the capital projects by name. You can sort and filter all these capital projects. And as you can see, this red lock means that all of these are locked. Because after we did the import, the only people that can unlock those are either Susan or myself. At this point, there's no reason to. The import is done. The numbers have been added to the operational budget. So if we need to, the only time that we would need to edit these is if there's change, you know, if we found errors.
If we change the capital plan, which is what we're talking about doing for instances.
I thought we had a conversation about needing to update the capital plan with something, but I've already forgot what that
is. one for facilities, and then there was one other. Yep.
Yeah. I remember we needed to do it. I don't remember why.
I don't think I remember anyone ever saying that we're going to redo the parking lot at District Court. I'm not complaining about it. Just hadn't heard anyone say anything about it up to this point.
Some of those projects get lumped into like a maintenance fund and they don't call them out specific. They like literally live in, live in funds that we don't see.
And it's like
but I'm with you.
It's like shoulder widening is it just is one line item. It could be anywhere.
So it could be like pavement preservation or whatever. And then but I'm with you. It's like, well, that's the kind of stuff we'd like to know.
Which one they have the ability to drill down. They don't just bring it to us. Yeah.
Not in a bad way, just like,
and there are also things that don't come to us if they're below the spending authority. So if paving that parking lot was below this,
but it sits somewhere in a budget, that's what I'm trying to say, is it sits in like a maintenance budget or a paving and operations budget, and then the expenditure falls within that, and they just make decisions within that line item.
Well, this is great. So does it say what fund it's going to come out of?
It doesn't, let's see, spreadsheet breakdown. If we look at the spreadsheet breakdown.
3-2.
Can you have a follow-up question on REIT 2? Just don't answer it today. The follow-up question is that REIT 2 will cover traffic signals, but we are increasingly nationwide replacing traffic signals with roundabouts. Can somebody find out if that's going to catch up?
If roundabouts be paid for 3-2. Question.
So while we were discussing the District Court parking lot, we were able just to bring it up. And this is what when you get into the request detail, you get an overview on the project. You see the project title name. There's a description of it. The level of detail that we get, like facilities added a map. Sometimes you'll get a map. Sometimes you'll get images. Like if it's for vehicles, you'll see vehicles. So depending on how much detail that the department provided, this is what you will see.
That's great.
You can also, when you're into these details, if you like a particular graphic, you can download the graphic here and you can download the image and save it. Mm-hmm. You can also export the whole detail for this request. And you can export it to PDF if this was a particular item that you wanted to discuss elsewhere with someone else.
Will this level of detail on capital plans be available in the digital book?
Not in the digital budget book, but in the transparency portal. In the
transparency portal. Mm-hmm. And do the citizens have access to the transparency portal?
If we turn it off, but let me show you, I'll go there. This is good segue. Mm-hmm. I will go ahead and take you to the transparency portal. First of all, I didn't want to jump around so much, but in the editor view, when there's a particular project, let's see, if we click on that project, let's say this Woodland Beach project, this is where we'll send it to projects. And when we go to projects falls under transparency. Mm. So I'll go there here in a second, but I'm showing you that you want to start with all your projects here, because this is where we can redirect the information, the details, the project details. If you create your, which I did see that people created their projects first, and ultimately to get it back into capital budgeting, which only flows, that's where the data flow chart comes in.
That's right, the data flow chart, yeah.
Right, so the projects does not flow upwards to operating budgeting.
Okay.
So you want all your projects to start in this capital budgeting module, because they can be pushed
to transparency or to the digital budget book. Okay. Yes. Interesting.
Yes. So I'm going to go to transparency. Like, let's just say I push this project. I would find it here in projects, and it would be under all these projects that happened to have been created in September last year.
Scroll all the way down, just out of curiosity. Okay, interesting.
These were all facility projects. Ryan did this work last year.
Yes. And ultimately, a lot of them he reduplicated, right, in the capital budgeting plan. So he had to duplicate work.
Did it twice because he didn't do it in the right order.
We weren't implementing this portion of the product. He had access to it and was like, well, I'm going to put my projects in here. So
yes.
When we looked at it, it's like, wow, that's really awesome.
Well, and he's very, it's really nice to have the public works and facilities. They were very enthusiastic about the project and putting in their detail. They put a lot of work into, as you can see, with at least the capital improved budgeting, where they, you know, there's 160 projects and they put in a lot of detail. But if we were to go into the project website, this is the website that is not made available to the public yet. But this is where, when we start turning on the projects, this is what the public would see. Mm.
Okay.
And I'm going to, let's see, where was I last at?
Let's Deception Pass Bridge on the page. Really are projects.
Let's put a tiny
gate. Deception Pass Bridge. Well, it's on your website as your projects.
Well, so
with a growler going over it.
So that was the website, but then if we go to the transparency portal, this is what we want to ultimately. So earlier, Melanie, you asked, so what is the purpose of the transparency portal? The digital budget book is kind of the why and how much for the public. But the transparency portal is kind of shows how are we progressing with our plan, with our budget. And so this is where this is the, you know, the framework, the beginning of the website. And we have not posted any of our projects yet. If we go to the overview, we will be able to link to our digital budget book. And ideally, I see that we have our transparency portal, this link, on our website, and also our digital budget book link on our Island County website.
So will we be, timeline-wise, will we be, once we finalize this budget, launching this sometime next year?
Well, right now we have a 2023 digital budget book. It is a first draft. We still have a lot of information we'd like to include in it. Cher's going to show you this now. Once the budget for 2024 is adopted, we will incorporate that budget into the work we've already done and then continue to build out these sections of the budget book. This budget book outline here goes along with the GFOA criteria.
Mm-hmm.
It allows us to build out information that would create a budget book that could be submitted to GFOA for the award. If we were able to get the award, it provides credibility to the budget and budget process and the information provided. So that ultimately would be a goal that I would like to adopt. And I think we both share that that goal. But right now I'll have Cher show you the things that we have been able to do with the 2023 budget book.
Yeah, so for the digital budget book, we would probably send you a link to the website if you wanted non-edit view, because there's no reviewer role for the digital budget book. It's kind of set up different how the contributors are we only have editors and contributors, and contributors are people that are assigned to their portion of the budget book. Mm-hmm. So they're department pages. So what we would do probably is send you the link when we're in editor mode here. This shows all the main sections that the budget book defaults to. This is ClearGov's template, which follows along this intro. This is the checklist, and everything under this checklist falls under the template that ClearGov has provided us. So it's kind of like, it gives us the foundation to build an award-winning budget book. And if we don't want to go for the award, we can at least hit the items that are prioritized by GFOA as best practices. The green circles indicate the things that have been completed or touched in the budget book so far. A lot of things are auto-generated, which is nice. Like example, the glossary and the table of contents, the stuff is all built in. If we want to, and when you're looking in, like this will be the opening page as a contributor, you won't be able to see these pages, but we do have the drop-down arrows that give us a little more information on the basis of why these are important, why they're mandatory. So it's a good guide when we develop the budget book.
So I was thinking that the budget book was just specifically bits and pieces from the capital budgeting, operational budgeting, personnel budget, and so on. What is included in the budget book that's not part of those things that we need contributors? Is it narrative things that are going
yes,
in there?
Okay. Yes. So good question. When I get to that part, the budget book has several pieces to it, as you can see. And then so the assignment part is the question is, how do we want to best structure our budget book? Because we don't have to stick with the template. We have the flexibility to, maybe we don't want to use a transmittal letter. Maybe we just want to start with Island County history. Maybe I'll click on, I was able to add our organizational chart for 2023. Maybe we don't want to discuss financial policies because we haven't had those perfected yet. And actually in...
we have an old one that we need to, discuss in the beginning of this next year.
Right. So if we, let's say we don't have that perfected, or we don't, it's not ready to be presented to the public, we can remove that section.
It would be, this might be a bad idea, but I like it right now. It might be interesting to form a small budget committee of the public that's not us. That kind of gets some insight from them on what they want to see in it, right? Because there's a story that we want to tell and there's information that makes sense to us, but we're not actually the consumers of this information. We need to consume information through our lens of how do you make it operate. But the kind of questions the public has, the information, it might be just good to put a small temporary
focus group
committee together to say, okay, we want to build this out. Mm-hmm. What do you want to see? What questions do you have? Because that would also help us make sure that our data is answering their questions. Or if they look at something and they come to a conclusion that we're like, no, that's not what that is.
Yes, you definitely,
right? Like mm-hmm. we know how to filter some of that. Oh, we know this fund or this is, but when, what do they see when they read it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I like it right now, but you know how I like public input till I get it. So
the idea of a focus group Susan said,
mm-hmm. yeah,
you know, just a ad hoc.
Yeah. I mean, it would be like for the purpose of doing this work, like if it was work you decided to do in 2024 or 2025, that you just pull that group together and say, okay, we want to work on this, and you'd use them for a period of time. And then please say thank you. And that's the end. Mm-hmm.
Never shall they give you.
Yeah, maybe you do your first one, and then they have a thing to feed off of to mm-hmm. bounce their ideas on.
Or even just like questions, right? Like what is it you'd want to know?
Yeah, and then we can customize this our presentation to them based on that, because this is just the general template.
Yeah,
that we can customize, and this is this view right here in editor is kind of the design mode. As you can see, we have introduction sections. I'll let you look at this really briefly to compare to when I switched to the web preview. We did complete the fund summaries, and they're very basic. These totally can be elaborated, and some of the funds that are managed by the departments, I'm sure the departments would love to elaborate on some of these fund summaries, if we gave them that opportunity. Funding sources, we haven't done anything in there. The departments is where we gave them about 2 weeks before the operational budgeting, before we opened the operational budgeting. So they didn't really have a lot of time to add their input. Some departments went all in and added information, and then some the departments didn't add any information. So for the purposes of this demonstration, I just grabbed things off of the Island County website to complete some of these department pages, and also their narratives from 2023. I kind of copy-pasted them into their departments. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go to the web preview to show you how that looks. This is the picture. I just threw the picture in. I was trying to find a picture. So, I mean, we can change these if they're all subject to changing.
For Casey.
And so I was on the organizational chart when I went to web preview. So that's why it opened here. But normally the web link will open on the transmittal letter, which we don't have anything in there.
And what does that mean? Usually when you issue a budget book, there is a transmittal letter to the Board of County Commissioners or from the Board of County Commissioners.
Like an executive summary.
Exactly. That talks about an overview of the budget and the organization and the organizational goals. It's I can provide some examples.
Well, I do have one example that you can look at if you want to. This is the sign-in screen. If you scroll down, some people don't know they can scroll down. I like to refer to the county, Palm Beach, Florida, to their digital budget book. And when we see, you can see how they restructured theirs to fit, you know, their organization. So it gives you like an example. You can see, because a lot of times when I'm working on things, I'm like, well, how did they do their fund structure? How did they do this? This is award winning. That's something that, you know, they do. How did they do it? This is how their budget book opens up. They have a budget message instead of a transmittal letter. Mm-hmm. You know, they reworded it, and then it's just a brief little, here's this year, blah, blah. In this instance, the county administrator is the one who introduced the budget book. It might be Susan. You know, it depends on how you want to assign the sections of the budget book to people. So now I'm going to go back. Let's see. I'll go back to a view like this.
Yeah.
Okay. It's easier. The little bar. I have a little bar right on my tabs. So so I'm back here. This is not the web view, is it not?
Why is it not allowing you to?
Maybe I just need to refresh.
Well, it's not been published. So I think you want the preview.
Yeah, I want the web preview. I went to web preview.
Awesome.
It's probably, I wasn't it. Here we are.
Go.
Okay. So one thing that is cool that comes automatically, ClearGov has added interactive data, demographics. We can update this information with more current information. The source of their information that they plugged in is data source, American Community. Yep. Mm-hmm. So if we can find more current information provided by, you know, in Washington State, we can do that. But right now, the default, they do this for us automatically.
Yeah,
and it's also interactive graphics. They have these tool tips. So that's really nice that that's already in there.
That's very helpful.
And let's see, everything else is blank on this side. Budget overview pretty much is all blank. A lot of this is just low-hanging fruit. All we had to do is just add like a couple paragraph explanations of how these topics apply to Island County. Fund summaries, I didn't do one for all funds, but like general fund.
We get it. Yeah.
Yeah. We start it. We provide the explanation of the fund, and then ClearGov does automatically provide these charts for us, these graphs. It's interactive. If the citizen or whoever is viewing the site doesn't like certain views or certain graphs, we can give them the option to select their graph type, or we could also remove that. We have some flexibility in that, but this is what it looks like. I kind of went through all the funds and
I'm doing two things at once, so this might mess it up. But I think in the right conversation right now. So expenditure by expense type. Can you tell the story in two different ways? So for example, when we say what percentage of our budget do we spend on law and justice, we don't include human services because we think of that as a, we think about as a different budgeting and program type, when in fact, many of those programs are deterrents from entering the law and justice system. They're very much a part of the partnership, and in how we allocate and spend our money, it's part of that law and justice story, as are, you know, the courts and the sheriff's office and the traditional things you think of. We also have these other investments we're making. Is there a way to tell that story?
Yes.
But I mean, not recode our whole world.
No, I mean, you could put that right here. You know, if you have like your...
For the specific fund, you could talk about that in the narrative and how that applies. And this really contributes to the overall law and justice goals.
Right.
Yes.
So each one of those right now, they're RCW based, or the information we did have in our fund budget book, which we have in our office. But those can be elaborated and really provide a great description for the public on how those funds are used.
I mean, we got dinged in some perk thing where they said we didn't spend enough money on law and justice, and they told us to give bigger raises, right? I think that was corrections. But it was like, well, wait a second, though. What did you count and what didn't you count in our overall operating budget? Again, because it's current expense that goes into most of the law and justice departments, they don't get charged the indirect. So they're not even paying their portion of what it costs to get a paycheck, HR, IT. We don't bill current expense that way, but it is that story of like, look, this is what law and justice really costs the county. And this is what we're investing in terms of this, like a fair amount of our budget goes towards
joint response,
stabilizing diversion. A very small portion of our population.
Right.
Yes, there's a lot of places in the budget book where you can discuss that story. You can, put it in the priorities issues. You can create your own section on that.
Okay.
And then you can also, collaborate, or what is it when you complement that information in fund summaries, and then also the departments. If we look at the department pages, it's also an opportunity for departments to discuss. I'm going to look at.
And Jill, to your point, if we were to put that in a narrative, we're able to, you know, you talk goes to a small percentage, but they're also a high utilizer population that costs the county an extraordinary amount of money. So by taking that population, providing diversion or jail transitions, reducing recidivism, we're actually making a difference for the taxpayer on saving them dollars in high cost programs.
Right. That's right.
Yes. So I'm just looking at one of the department pages.
Approval over what the departments put in their narrative?
Well, that's the thing. We haven't really set any guidelines. I mean, we've...
Before anything gets published or turned on, single one of these pages needs to be reviewed and approved by the commissioners.
Yes, we would. Yeah, never go that.
And Michael has to update his
picture because he doesn't have a mustache. Editing
Is there any rule around how recent your pictures have to be?
No. We tried to make them consistent.
It needs to reach.
Are we close to done?
Yes. Yeah, we're done. So we can set you the links. Set you up to where you can review, start getting into the product, and then
I kind of want to get through the process, and then when you're ready to do 2024, I'll play in it. But there's just enough on my plate just doing this right now. Yeah.
Any further questions?
No, this is fabulous, you guys. I really appreciate this morning. And I was wondering, what are they going to do for 2 hours? And oh my God.
Well, yeah, we didn't even get to, I had quite a bit
more to talk about,
but this was good.
I mean, I think what was really helpful, it's interesting to learn the tool. Of course, I'm listening for what's in it for, you know, me.
Of course.
But I think what was interesting on things to follow up is one, that list of unfilled positions. And we had that conversation about how much utilization of the healthcare savings we're putting in there. Mm-hmm. Understanding that number would be helpful for us, because if we're at 60%, we're using 30%, maybe we can walk that down to 50%. And that's a ongoing operational pickup, right? we learned that that REIT two, I'm interested in REIT two now. I know this is what wasn't what you were trying to do, but this is what I walked away with.
This is the tool that allows us for a greater discussion. I think it's great.
So the REIT two, making sure that it's a little confusing because it says maintenance of capital facilities. It says you can't do park work, but then it says maintenance of capital facilities. So I want to make sure that anything from parks that we can put on that fund, we've done, because that's all current expense pickup, right? So if we can even put $10,000 over there.
Mm-hmm.
We got pickup of $10,000.
I'm just saying, I had the same note in my book, we have two ways we can do parks maintenance now, M&O under Conservation Futures, and now we have this REIT too, so that, and then if that all gets expended, we have the way we do it now. So I had that same note about parks. It's also why I asked about the roundabouts. Sorry, Jill.
No, it's all right. I had one other thing, but I can't read it except for I can read the word exception. And then that's all I can read out of like six words. So that obviously was not a high priority.
Put your glasses on, see if it
helps. No, even still, read my own writing. But I think those are some, I think those are some areas where we can maybe look, or types of areas where we can look and say, okay, have we leveraged all these other funds to pick up current expense, even in small amounts? Are we over utilizing the healthcare savings? And we can pick up some ongoing operations. Do we have unfilled positions that we really are just holding, but we've not ever been able to fill, or we don't need them operationally? I mean, I think those conversations in this particular budget cycle will be particularly important, because it's a lot easier to let go of someone you never hired, right? That's always my preference.
Or if you never could hire them, reconfigure the position.
And this wasn't, I don't know what it says, but it wasn't related to budget. It was more of a policy thing of like, when we let people rehire open positions, do we let them double up, or do we make them run through the costs? Or, and then I had exceptions would be, so that was what I was saying. I remember, but that's not. Okay, but those would be some current expense pickup opportunities that I think we probably should consider.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to reopen the CIP plan and there's a shifting from current expense or REIT one or two, that's the time to do that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's time to definitely.
Well, I'm glad we got the project, the software, and I'm really grateful you guys have just jumped in full board and learned how to do it and filled all the.
Here was my pieces. Sorry, Melanie.
No, I'm done.
My other question was with the interface between this program and the, what was the other software called?
Finance Enterprise.
Finance Enterprise then is the actual budget, right? It's like the reality of what we spend. Is that right?
It's the
auditor's
the tool. Actual expenditures.
And this is our hypothetical tool. It's very accurate now. We've got more accuracy. But is there a way to reconcile the two so that Finance Enterprise comes back, like when they close out the budget, and then it reconciles against what we have in ClearGov?
So we've actually just loaded the most recent 2023
actuals,
okay,
through June 30th.
Okay.
So there's the auditor's office as they're preparing the financial statements, makes adjustments to it. So the most recent, probably close to final numbers are in ClearGov now.
Because I'm not planning for like this budget with this statement, but if this trend continues, like future budgets, where it would be really important to get that reconciliation of what's overutilized and underutilized based on our budgeting, because that also is that opportunity to say, look, office supplies have been overfunded in every department by 10%. We can go through and cut that by 10% across the board. Like just that reconciliation tool will allow us to find where we've got pockets of money that we're not utilizing appropriately and try to redirect them towards salary stabilization and things that we need to.
And you can operate. See that in the system for the two actual years. We could even load in how much we've utilized this year. I find that less useful because it's not
right,
full data.
Right. Right. You need the closeout years to really tell.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to do that level of work this year. I think these other things that we talked about will get us through with what we need to, with our fund balance. You know, we can step things down with not recognizing we're not filling all those positions, maybe looking at the healthcare savings. That should be enough current expense pickup to support wage increases and licensing fees and things that we've got to deal with. But I think for next year, then this part of the conversation becomes more important. Where do we have pockets of money that we're not utilizing? We're going to need to pull those back, I think, before we get to the next level of like difficult choices. So I just want to find all the,
all the opportunity
before that gets, And I don't think we need to do it this year. I think we have enough, but we might need to do it next year.
I don't remember if you were budgeting in 2008, but in 2008, when I lost everything on contracts and I just had these huge, massive cuts to programs, I swear to God, we were counting every pencil in the organization to make sure we didn't need to order more pencils. I mean, that was the level of detail in order to protect core programs and core positions that we went to.
Yeah. And I'd rather, try to keep track of my pens and not use a new pen every day.
That's right.
Versus telling someone you don't have a job and you can't pay your mortgage. So that's like anything we can do to grab institutional money that doesn't hurt people.
That's right.
The real shame of telling someone you don't have a job and you can't pay your mortgage because we don't have enough money budgeted. And then when it gets to the budget reconciliation, we didn't have to let that person go. Right. There was enough money out there.
Right.
That's why we need to do it.
Right. That's another really good point.
Oh, but circling back on the actual expenditures, I don't think we've done a great job of the beginning of the year, even in March when the financials are fairly solid, is bringing all of those components and taking a look at that.
Or even a mid-year variance report. It's just always been a little bit aspirational without this level of a tool like this. Are you guys ready to adjourn? Okay, we are adjourned. We'll see y'all next Tuesday.